taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome once again to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Of course, one thing we do is we look at what the Supreme Court is doing. In a previous video, I reviewed oral arguments before the Supreme Court in two sets of cases involving federal vaccine mandates. And it did not take long for the court to decide those cases. However, as is often the case, the reporting on these cases has been fairly atrocious. I've heard several respected people claim that the court struck down the OSHA mandate, while others lamented the court deciding not to protect healthcare workers. While the opinions the court offered are split, we need to remember that the court was only dealing with whether or not to enjoin these mandates until these cases have worked their way through the court system. The actual opinions regarding these injunctions are a mixed bag, but certainly not the definitive outcome you may have heard or read. So let us look at the opinions without the hype or hyperbole and see if we can find a clue as to the state of the justice system in America. For those of you who did not watch my video on the oral arguments, let me set the stage. Four cases were combined into two. Now, two cases that were combined involved the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA mandate, National Federation of Independent Businesses versus OSHA, and Ohio versus OSHA. Now, while the other two involved the Health and Human Services healthcare worker mandate, Biden versus Missouri and Becerra versus Louisiana. Now, in the OSHA cases, the appellants were asking for an injunction staying the enacting of the mandate, while in the HHS cases, the Biden administration wanted stays against the mandate overturned. Let's start with the OSHA case. Applicants are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim that the secretary lacked authority to impose the mandate. The court determined that NFIB and Ohio were likely to win their cases on the merits, but this was only part of the justification for the court issuing the stay. While the reason the court believed the appellants will win is covered in the detail in the opinion, let's cut through that and get right to the point. Administrative agencies are creatures of statute. They accordingly possess only the authority that Congress has provided. The secretary has ordered 84 million Americans to either obtain a COVID vaccine or undergo weekly medical testing at their own expense. This is no everyday exercise of federal power. It is instead a significant encroachment into the lives and health of a vast number of employees. Now, OSHA, as an administrative agency, was created by law. Therefore, OSHA only has the power delegated by Congress in that law. Now, while Justice Gorsuch's concurrence does make mention of the limits placed on the United States by the Constitution, there is no constitutional argument made by the court as a whole. The question raised before the court, and which most of the court focused on, was whether or not Congress authorized the types of actions OSHA took when issuing their Emergency Temporary Standard, or ETS. The question then is whether the act plainly authorizes the secretary's mandate. It does not. The act empowers the secretary to set workplace safety standards, not broad public health measures. And no provision of the act addresses public health more generally, which falls outside of OSHA's sphere of expertise. The dissent protests that we are imposing a limit found no place in the governing statutes. Not so. It is the text of the agency's Organic Act that repeatedly makes clear that OSHA is charged with regulating occupational hazards and the safety and health of employees. As the majority of the court put it, the Organic, or the Originating Act that created OSHA, gave it the power to regulate occupational hazards of employees, and not any hazard that an employee may face while at work. Permitting OSHA to regulate the hazards of daily life simply because most Americans have jobs and face those same risks while on the clock would significantly expand OSHA's regulatory authority without clear congressional authorization. Now, of course, those who dissented from the opinion have a different point of view, which I'll look at later. For now, let's look at how the majority dealt with the dissenters' opinions. The dissent contends that OSHA's mandate is comparable to a fire or sanitation regulation imposed by the agency. But a vaccine mandate is strikingly unlike the workplace regulations that OSHA has typically imposed. A vaccination, after all, cannot be undone at the end of the workday. Contrary to the dissent's contention, imposing a vaccine mandate on 84 million Americans in response to a worldwide pandemic is simply not part of what the agency was billed for. That is not to say OSHA lacks authority to regulate occupational-specific risks related to COVID-19. Where the virus poses a special danger because of the particular features of an employee's job or workplace, targeted regulations are plainly permissible. We do not doubt, for example, that OSHA could regulate researchers who work with the COVID-19 virus. So too could OSHA regulate risks associated with working in particularly crowded or cramped environments. But the danger present in such workplaces differ in both degree and kind from the everyday risk of contracting COVID-19 that all face. OSHA's indiscriminate approach fails to account for the crucial distinction between the occupational risk and risk more generally, and accordingly, the mandate takes on the character of a general public health measure rather than occupational safety or health standard. The idea that a vaccine mandate is comparable to fire or sanitation regulation is patently ridiculous. No OSHA fire or sanitation regulation impacts the worker after they've left the worksite. Neither does it involve injecting something into the employee's body. And while the court believes that Congress has authorized OSHA to regulate the healthcare decisions of researchers or those who work in crowded spaces, nothing in the Constitution delegates the United States that power. And while not law in the United States, the requirement that someone take an experimental pharmaceutical is a violation of the Nuremberg Code, a set of standards created in 1947, which physicians must follow when experimenting on human subjects. But Justice Gorsuch wrote a concurring opinion, which Justices Thomas and Alito joined. The central question we face today is, who decides? No one doubts that the COVID-19 pandemic has posed challenges for every American, or that our state, local, and national governments all have roles to play in combating the disease. The only question is whether an administrative agency in Washington, one charged with overseeing workplace safety, may mandate the vaccination or regular testing of 84 million people, or whether, as 27 states before us submit, that work belongs to state and local governments across the country and the people's elected representatives in Congress. This court is not a public health authority, but it is charged with resolving disputes about which authorities possess the power to make the laws that govern us under the Constitution and the laws of the land. Justice Gorsuch was mostly right, because this case does revolve around the question of who decides. The issue at hand, though, regarding if and when to take an experimental pharmaceutical is not between the states and the feds, but between governments and the people. If governments can require you become a medical test subject, then they are no different than the government officials who chose people for Dr. Mengele's test. Justice Gorsuch went on. The federal government's powers, however, are not general, but limited and divided. Not only must the federal government properly invoke a constitutionally enumerated source of authority to regulate in this area or any other, it must also act consistently with the Constitution's separation of powers. And when it comes to that obligation, this court has established at least one firm rule. We expect Congress to speak clearly. If it wishes to assign an executive agency decisions of vast economic and political significance, we sometimes call this the major questions doctrine. OSHA's mandate fails that doctrine test. The agency claims the power to force 84 million Americans to receive a vaccine or undergo regular testing. By any measure, that is a claim of power to resolve a question of vast national significance. Yet Congress has nowhere clearly assigned so much power to OSHA. I find it interesting that while Justice Gorsuch claims that Congress can only act within a constitutionally enumerated source of authority, no such source was ever cited, either during the oral arguments or in this decision. Justice Gorsuch concluded with, "The question before us is not how to respond to the pandemic, but who holds the power to do so. The answer is clear. Under the law as it stands today, that power rests with the states and Congress, not OSHA." While Justice Gorsuch was wrong that the power to respond to the pandemic resides in the states and Congress, he was correct that it does not reside in OSHA. Justice Breyer, joined by Justices Sotomayor and Kagan, disagreed. Every day, COVID-19 poses grave dangers to the citizens of this country, and particularly to its workers. The disease has by now killed almost 1 million Americans and hospitalized almost 4 million. It spreads by person-to-person contact in confined indoor spaces, so causes harm in nearly all workplace environments. And in those environments, more than any other, individuals have little control and therefore little capacity to mitigate risk. COVID-19, in short, is a menace in work settings. The proof is all around us. Since the disease's onset, more Americans have seen their workplaces transformed. So the administrative agency charged with ensuring health and safety in workplaces did what Congress commanded too. It took action to address COVID-19's continuing threat in those spaces. It seems justices are just as susceptible to emotional tirades devoid of evidence as much of the rest of the public. COVID is not a grave danger to this country, and it turns out it never truly was. Of the over 800,000 deaths the CDC touts on its website, they've admitted 75% of those deaths were with COVID, not necessarily of COVID. Conveniently lost in Justice Breyer's argument is the fact that, even with that inflated number, they represent only 1.3% of those who tested positive for COVID and only 0.25% of the population as a whole. Now, lost on all three of these justices is the fact that they are not medical experts. They claim to be experts in the law, but all of them miss the basic fact that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. As Article 6, Clause 2 states, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding." Not only are the justices bound to the Constitution, but it clearly states that any power not specifically delegated to the United States by it belongs to someone else. From the 10th Amendment, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." Let's look at Biden versus Missouri and Becerra versus Louisiana. While the court found that OSHA most likely exceeded its mandate by imposing a vaccine mandate on private employers, it overturned a stay against HHS doing the same thing on healthcare workers. One such function, perhaps the most basic given the department's core mission, is to ensure that the healthcare providers who care for Medicare and Medicaid patients protect their patients' health and safety. Such providers include hospitals, nursing homes, ambulatory surgical centers, hospices, rehabilitation facilities, and more. To that end, Congress authorized the Secretary to promulgate, as a condition of the facility's participation in the program, such requirements as he finds necessary in the interest of the health and safety of the individuals who are furnished services in the institution. Relying on these authorities, the Secretary has established long lists of detailed conditions with which facilities must comply to be eligible to receive Medicare and Medicaid funds. Lost on the court is a point made by the dissent. Covered employers must fire noncompliant workers or risk fines and termination of their Medicare and Medicaid provider agreements. As a result, the government has effectively mandated vaccination for 10 million healthcare workers. Once again, we see the dangers of succumbing to the siren song of government money. First, they offer you something for free. Then they threaten to withhold it if you don't comply with their wishes. There may be some justification for the federal government to set conditions for accepting their money. But fining companies for not firing employees who do not submit to medical experimentation goes far beyond the powers Congress delegated to HHS, much less what the Constitution delegated to the United States. In his dissent, Justice Thomas, joined by Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett, brought the central question into focus. "The government begins by invoking two statutory provisions that generally grant CMS authority to promulgate rules to implement Medicare and Medicaid. The first authorizes CMS to publish such rules and regulations as may be necessary to the efficient administration of the agency's function. The second authorizes CMS to prescribe such regulations as may be necessary to carry out the administration of the insurance programs under the Medicare Act. The government has not established that either provision empowers it to impose a vaccine mandate. Rules carrying out the administration of Medicare and Medicaid are those that serve the practical management and direction of those programs." Does the government, with the power to regulate the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, also have the power to regulate the employment standards of those who provide the services? If they do, does that include fining those who do not comply with the new rules rather than simply not renewing their contracts? So I believe Justice Gorsuch made the point in his concurrence on the NFIB versus OSHA case. It seems, too, that the agency pursues its regulatory initiative only as a legislative workaround. That is exactly what these four mandates were, a way to get around not only Congress, but the Constitution itself. And when it comes to the Supreme Court, their answer was pretty much split the baby. The only difference between the cases was the scope of the mandate and the agency that issued it. The court basically said that Congress did not delegate the power to OSHA to deal with public safety issues, but it did to HHS. The court did so with no definitive evidence that Congress delegated such power to HHS, much less that it was power delegated to the United States in the first place. These cases show the American people two crucial points. First, the United States government today acts more like a kingdom than we've had since 1776. The laws don't matter. The Constitution doesn't matter. Only what those in government think is best for everyone, regardless of the cost we bear or the rights we lose. Second, those who are looking for the courts to protect their rights are trusting in a corrupt system. When the supreme law of the land is set aside for the political machinations of Congress and the opinions of judges, then we are no longer a constitutional republic, but a banana republic. If there are no consequences for the evil deeds done by this administration, supported by justices who have turned their backs on their oaths, then all the talk of liberty and justice for all is nothing more than a fairy tale we tell ourselves or a mantra to help us sleep while our country collapses around us. We may as well begin our Pledge of Allegiance with the words, "Once upon a time." So has freedom and justice for all become merely a fairy tale? Something the American people tell themselves to make themselves feel better? Well, it seems more and more to be coming true in America. Because less and less do we, the people who had ordained and established the Constitution that created the federal government, less and less do we exercise our control over the government. Now, the court basically split the baby. And it did so without an actual constitutional argument. They simply looked and said, did Congress grant OSHA or HHS the ability to enact these mandates? And they split the baby. They did make passing mention of, well, you know, at first the Constitution has to authorize Congress, and then Congress passes a law. But they never checked to see if the Constitution ever authorized the United States to do this. Because if they had, they would have noticed that the Constitution does not authorize OSHA in the first place. There's nothing in the Constitution about delegating to the United States the power to regulate anything that happens within a state. Interstate commerce, yes. But you see, they've ignored that interstate part. They said, well, anything that could possibly implicate or involve or impact interstate commerce, we can micromanage. Didn't say anything about making regular the interstate commerce. No, they ignored that. They would have noticed that nothing in the Constitution has anything to do with providing health insurance, paying for health care, or being involved in health care in any way whatsoever. All they did was say, well, is there a way? Can we twist and meddle with what Congress did and see if they actually said that OSHA and HHS can do this, never asking, did the Constitution authorize it in the first place? So now the Biden administration is withdrawing the mandate now that the stays against the OSHA COVID mandate, now that the stay has been put in place. Now, this could be one of two things, one of two possibilities. One is the Biden administration has realized, you know, we really don't have authority to do this. So, you know, the court did say that we were likely to lose. So we'll just give up now. That's a possibility. Of course, the other possibility is they're pulling a stunt that's been used before. See, by pulling the OSHA mandate, they're trying to make this case moot. so that the court will not actually come to an opinion about whether or not OSHA has the authority to do this. See, then they can turn around and put up another mandate, maybe word it slightly differently, and start this clock all over again. I haven't seen it, but I fully expect the Biden administration to now ask the court to declare that the OSHA, the lawsuit against the OSHA mandate, all those are moot because they've withdrawn the mandate. And then it wouldn't surprise you one little bit. If they do that, watch. I would not be surprised at all if they come back and say, oh, well, we've put this other mandate and now we've got to start this entire clock all over again because, well, it's not the mandate that you actually sued over. It's a new mandate. It's a different mandate. A little bit of legal shenanigans. But see, there's more to this. See, what most people don't seem to have realized is we have effectively socialized so much of our medical care. See, now we have the Food and Drug Administration, which is now taking two monoclonal antibody treatments and revoking their emergency use authorization. Why did they pull the emergency use authorization? Well, in their own words, they say the data shows that such treatments are highly unlikely to be effective against the Omicron variant. Funny, I have seen many reports of it being highly effective against COVID as a whole. So is it possible? No, see, they haven't proven that it's not. They just say it's highly unlikely. This is a snow job. This is the federal government saying, we don't like monoclonal antibodies. Therefore, now they are pulling them because, why? Because they've been effective already? Florida has shown just how effective monoclonal antibodies have been. Now, I'm not promoting monoclonal antibodies. I have issues with monoclonal antibodies because they are a man-made attempt to mimic what your body does naturally, and that is create antibodies. Why would I take a man-made drug to mimic a natural antibody if I can just get the Omicron variant and have my body produce it naturally? But you see, they didn't say that it was unsafe. They didn't say that the data shows it is not effective against Omicron. They just said it is highly unlikely. This stinks to high heaven of politics rather than law, rather than science, rather than the Constitution. But see, since we've put the federal government in charge of food and drugs, two things that are not authorized by the Constitution of the United States, the FDA is an illegal organization. It's an illegal agency. There is nothing in the Constitution to regulate food or to regulate drugs. Now, they get around this by saying, well, you can't put it into interstate commerce. Again, that's a snow job. That is trying to make it seem like it's constitutional. No. But what has happened? Now, the Food and Drug Administration gets to decide, hey, you don't get to decide whether or not to try this. You don't get the chance to look at the options and pick what you and your doctor think is most likely to work. The FDA has pulled its emergency use authorization because it doesn't think it's going to work. Not that it's proven not to work. Not that it's been proven dangerous. This is the federal government, again, telling you what you can and cannot do. And sure, the White House is defending this. Hey, look at it. You know, they withdrew the antibody treatments because they don't work against Omicron, except that is not what the FDA said. Jen Psaki is lying through her teeth when she says the FDA says that they don't work against Omicron. Her words. They said it is highly unlikely that it will. There's a difference, folks. The difference is Jen Psaki makes it sound like, hey, we've tested it, it's failed, it doesn't work, therefore, we're going to pull it. When what the FDA said was, well, we looked at some of the data and we don't think it's going to work. This is just federal government being in charge again. This comes all the way back to who decides. The federal government is claiming the right to decide for you what the best medical treatment is. Not to test and evaluate and give you information about the effectiveness and the safety. No, no, no. They want the power. They have assumed the power to decide because the American people have given that up. When the federal government created the FDA, we said, yeah, sure, protect us from ourselves. Don't make us do the work. We'll let the government decide for us. And now they are. Now you are a subject of the FDA. You no longer have free choice in medical treatments. It is no longer a decision between you and your doctor or your healthcare provider. It is between you, your healthcare provider, and the federal government. How do you feel now? How free do you think you are now? The answer should be not nearly free enough. Not nearly free enough. Now, before I head to break, I want to remind you of a couple things. I am still doing my Constitution study online. You can join the Bill of Rights study absolutely free. We are reading and studying the Bill of Rights. We're going through it clause by clause. We're looking at the history. We're looking at the definitions of words so that we can truly understand the rights that these amendments were created to protect. So that you can look at this and realize, hey, the federal government isn't allowed to do this. And just how empty and valid, just how much like the emperor's new clothes the federal government is. It struts around assuming it has all this power, and it doesn't. And if you want to learn how, if you want to learn more, if you want to know when your rights are being violated, if you want to be prepared to defend and assert them, well, then go to constitutionstudy.com/study and try out the free Bill of Rights study. If you've missed any of them, I've already done the first one, then it's real simple. You'll be able to watch the recording. You'll still be able to participate in the discussion group. We have a discussion group open where we can discuss all these things. Just go to constitutionstudy.com/study to get that information. And also, please check out healthycell.com. You know, living a healthy lifestyle, being able to defend yourself against whether it's COVID or the cold or the flu or anything else involves eating right. And Healthy Cell has come up with a pill-free set of supplements to do just that. They have different formulas based on what your needs are. For example, my wife has always had trouble sleeping. She's always had a hard time getting to sleep, staying asleep as long as I've known her. She loves the REM sleep. I use it too when I travel. I sleep fine at home, but when I travel, sometimes I don't sleep so well. Because when you do that, if you don't sleep well, you get up the next day and you're sluggish and it's hard to get the work done and your life just is no fun that way. So try REM sleep. It helps you fall asleep. It helps you stay asleep. It helps you get the rest you need so you can wake up refreshed and ready to go. Now, they have other formulas you can try, but I'm recommending today the REM sleep. And go to healthycell.com, try any of their formulas, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. You'll get 20% off your first order. So give them a try. Try any of their formulas. Try any of their products. Just make sure when you check out, you use the code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa, from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Yes, we read, we study the Constitution. We teach a rising generation to be free, which includes looking at what's being done by our government and asking them, is it constitutional? Or how about just, is it rational? See, the first half of the program, we dealt with the vaccine mandates, the OSHA and HHS mandates, and the Supreme Court opinion on the stays. Then we talked a bit about the Biden administration, the FDA, pulling its emergency use authorization for two of the monoclonal antibody treatments. Now, here's what's interesting. Just to remind you that the White House says the FDA pulled it because they don't work. But the FDA said, well, they pulled it because they said it's highly unlikely to work. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been following a lot of the work that Dr. McCullough has been doing. I think he's been doing some great work. You judge for yourself the quality of his work. But there is a group of doctors offering telehealth services, and they claim a 99.99% survival rate. 99.99, four nines. Those of you from the IT availability will recognize four nines. But they were having a discussion, and there's, again, the website, I believe, is called myfreedoctor.com. They have volunteer doctors, and they have early treatment that works. Now, they're basing this off of Dr. McCullough's treatment protocol, which consists of hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, prednisone, other low-cost generic drugs, and monoclonal antibodies. Now, if they have a 99.9% survival rate, don't you think maybe those products should, you know, we might want to have access to them? Now, again, these were monoclonal antibodies were allowed under an emergency use authorization. It was not a full FDA test, but they did. They did approve it, and now the FDA has pulled it, which means if you want to try Dr. McCullough's treatment protocol for you or for a loved one, well, you're going to have a harder time getting the entire protocol because the FDA says, no, 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 no. See, we don't think this is going to work. Sure, we've got facts and evidence that it does help, but nope, we're not going to do it because we think it's highly unlikely it's going to work. And they claim to be scientists. Now, again, you're dealing with Dr. McCullough. He has been right in many of these, in much of what he has said about coronavirus and COVID-19 and SARS-CoV-2 has turned out to be correct. Dr. McCullough is a cardiologist and an epidemiologist, so he does kind of know what he's talking about. And if doctors following his recommended protocol have a 99.99% survival rate, maybe that's something we want to take a look at. And so whether you want to try it or not, what does it say about the FDA? That they're pulling their authorization for a drug not because it's been proven to be non-effective, not because it's been proven to be harmful, but simply because they say they don't think it's likely that it's going to work. They've been so right. Remember, this is the same FDA, I believe, that said the mRNA vaccine, quote-unquote vaccines, the fake vaccines, that they would stop you from getting COVID, that they were 95% effective, that they'd stop you from spreading COVID. They've been so right in the past. Why do we listen to these people? Why do we turn over our right to make decisions for ourselves to bureaucrats? Could it be we have become so indoctrinated with this idea that government is in control, that government, that we are actually subjects of government, that we can't think for ourselves anymore, that we can't look at, we can't find data anymore, that we can't think for ourselves anymore, that we've truly become subjects, sheep, slaves to those we put in government? Now, that's the FDA. I've been covering a little bit about what's been going on in my old home state, the empire that is known as New York. And a few days ago, a judge opined that Governor Hochul's mask mandate in certain areas, including schools, was unconstitutional. Right? The court said so. The court looked at it and said, nope, it's unconstitutional. Yet, what do we find? Immediately, by the way, the governor of the state of New York appealed that opinion. That's not a surprise. See, state officials argued that it should remain in effect until the court hears the appeal. So, apparently, many schools simply continued to put in place mask mandates, even though the court said no. You see, the Secretary of Education said, it is SED's understanding that the Department of Health will appeal the Nassau County Supreme Court decision, which will result in an automatic stay that will unambiguously restore the mask rule until such time as an appellate court issues a further ruling. Has a stay been put in place? Now, a stay has subsequently been put in place. But again, what you have the Department of Health and the Department of Education saying, listen, we know that the court has said this is unconstitutional. We are pretty sure that we're going to get a stay. So just ignore everything else. He said the secretary went on to say, therefore, schools must continue to follow the mask rule. No, not until a court says otherwise. You see, again, I'm not familiar with the public education laws in New York, but I don't believe the Secretary of Education has the authority to order a school to ignore a court's opinion. I don't think so. Now, does a school have the authority to ignore a court's opinion? Well, possibly a private school, and one that where the court's opinion was blatantly unconstitutional. But again, what we're dealing with is, does government decide or do you decide? Because understand, what we're talking about are mask mandates, not whether or not someone is allowed to wear a mask in school. We're talking about being forced to wear a mask in school. Now, there was a state rep, Elise Stefanik. She tweeted, "It is unacceptable and shameful that Kathy Hochul would cause mass confusion for our superintendents, principals, teachers, parents, and students, lying that there is a stay when there is no stay this morning. Her mask mandate is illegal." And understand, her mask mandate is not illegal because a judge said so. Her mask mandate is illegal because it exercises a power not delegated to the state of New York. Now, New York State is one of the few states that does not have in their constitution a statement that all power is inherent in the people. At least I don't believe so. I don't remember that from when I did some study of it. But Ms. Stefanik is correct. Until the stay is put in place, the standing court order should prevent schools from instituting mask mandates. Again, not preventing people from wearing masks, but not requiring that they wear a mask. In other words, allow parents to make decisions for their children. Now, subsequent to that, this took place early on January 25th. Later that day, a appeals court judge granted a stay while the governor's administration pursues an appeal. So they did eventually get their stay. That, to me, says more about the New York State quote-unquote judicial system than anything else. But the question still remains, is it the law because the governor said so? Is it the law because a judge says so? Or is it the law because the Constitution allows it? I've seen a lot of people claiming that the confusion between the two judgments, the opinion of the Nassau County Court and the appeals court stay, that promoting the mandate when a stay was not put in place was illegal because a judge said so. Judges don't make law. Judges offer opinions. And in this judge's opinion, the mask mandate in schools is unconstitutional and unenforceable. The mask mandate in public places is unconstitutional and unenforceable. They offer opinions only. You see, ultimately, it's up to the people of the state of New York to decide, listen, did we give the governor or the executive branch or even the government of the state of New York as a whole the power to order mask wearing? Now, again, I'm not an expert on the New York State Constitution. I tried reading it once. It was extremely painful. It appeared to be written by lawyers in legalese. That's the state of affairs. But understand, the mask mandate isn't illegal or legal simply because a judge says so. That is not a constitutional republic. That's an oligarchy. And the fact that a judge found your one way and you are happy with it doesn't make it right. And then a judge finds another way that you're unhappy with doesn't make it wrong. The question is it a power delegated to government or not? I'd be more than happy for my listeners in the state of New York to discuss this further. And I'll give you a great place to do that. You can go to constitutionscholars.com. You can register for free. You can join the New York State group, and we can have this discussion in that group. That's what those groups are there for, to have these types of discussions and debates. But while we're up in the Northeast, let's go from New York State to Boston, Massachusetts. And there have been a series of news reports of people who have been removed from transplant lists because of their refusal to be medical experiments. There have been people waiting for kidney transplants. I believe one was a lung transplant. Well, in Boston, A Boston hospital has removed a patient from the heart transplant waiting list because they refused to take the COVID jabs. Now, the report I'm reading, the article I'm reading out of the Epoch Times, which is came through CBS Boston, I believe, calls them vaccines. Legally, they're not vaccines. They're gene therapy. By the way, they're also experimental. Now, the father of the patient, David Ferguson, said, "My son has gone to the edge of death to stick to his guns. His heart has now deteriorated so much to the point where it won't work." And a hospital in Boston is now going to refuse life-saving treatment, not even the opportunity for life-saving treatment, because this man, DJ Ferguson, refuses to be the subject of a medical experiment. See, I keep pointing this out because language is important. You see, if you refer to these things as vaccines, that puts certain ideas in our head. A vaccine prevents you from getting sick. A vaccine prevents you from spreading a disease. But that's not what these mRNA vaccines do. They're not legally a vaccine. I know the CDC kind of rewrote their definition of a vaccine to cover this stuff, but according to the legal text that I found, these are not legally vaccines. You see, according to the Free Legal Dictionary, a vaccine is a preparation of a weakened or killed pathogen, such as a bacterium or virus, or of a portion of the pathogen structure that is administered to prevent or treat infection by the pathogen, and that functions by stimulating the production of an immune response. Pfizer and Moderna jabs are not a weakened or killed pathogen. They are not a structure, a portion of the structure of the pathogen. It is gene therapy. It is meant to get your body to produce its own structures of the pathogen to figure out how to combat it. In other words, it's teaching your body how to make what is dangerous to it. And by all the definitions, that means these are experimental processes. mRNA has never been widely used in a human population for a treatment, a pharmacological treatment that is not a vaccine, that has not been fully tested, that has not been fully approved by the FDA, that's issued under an emergency use authorization. This is an experiment. And now we have the failure to treat a life-threatening disease in a patient. We once again have this because they refuse to be involved in a medical experiment. By the way, a medical experiment where one of the known side effects is myocarditis. You want to take a person who has a damaged heart and you want to give him a drug that can potentially damage his heart further. And you want to do that so that they can give him, so that he can go on a list for a chance to get a new heart. Remember, it's not like they're sitting there with their heart in hand going, you know, thump, 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 thump. Here, take the shot, take the jab, and then we'll give you the heart. No. They don't even want him on the list until he has submitted. This is the worst, one of the worst forms of medical extortion. This is medical extortion. This is a violation of the Nuremberg Code. This is coercion to be a participant in human medical experiments. Let's stop playing around with, well, the vaccine. No, this is not about keeping people safe. The vaccine does not stop the spread of COVID. It does not stop people from getting COVID. It might stop people from getting COVID for a short period of time. It may decrease the chances, but only for a short period of time. This is extortion. There is no one has yet shown me a medical reason why a transplant recipient must get a a pharmacological product that does not stop the spread of a disease. It's not, you know, he's not worried about getting infected. The vaccine hasn't been proven to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Interesting enough, I know four people in the last week, all of whom have been vaccinated, all of whom have gotten COVID, who tested positive for COVID-19 within the last 14 days. 7 to 14 days. No, there's no medical reason for this. It's not to protect the patient. It's not to protect the staff. This is political. I can think of no other reason why a doctor or a medical provider would extort a patient to become a medical experiment in exchange for life-saving treatment. Tell me how this is any different than Dr. Mengele and the work that was done by the physicians and the administrators that were charged with crimes against humanity that led to the Nuremberg Code. This happened in Germany, and it's why we have a Nuremberg Code. And this is a crime against humanity. And if history is any judge, history will look at this insanity with the same vilification as we look at the Holocaust, as we look at the medical experiments done by Nazi Germany. This, and I know people are going to be upset about this, if this was a time of war, these would be war crimes. These would be war crimes. They are crimes against humanity. And when will the American people stand up and say, no more? I don't have the wherewithal. Please, if there's a doctor out there that will put this man on a waiting list, what do we have to do to get him to where he can get treatment rather than be extorted? See, that's the thing I want to start thinking about. You see, it's one thing to simply say, oh, that's terrible, that's extortion. What are we going to do about it? What can we do to rally around this man? Forget pressuring that Boston hospital, right? Can we find a doctor that will put him on the transplant waiting list without demanding he be a medical experiment? And then what do we have to do to get him to where he will get treatment? I don't know. But if somebody does, please let us know. Put a comment on the show page. Tell us. You know, maybe we can find out how to contact this gentleman and say, here is an option. But we have to stop sitting back and saying, well, at least it isn't me. We have to be just as worried about the rights of our fellow Americans being destroyed as we are of our own rights. Because if we don't stop it while it's this gentleman, one day it may be you or your loved one. And I want to close out with another example of how the Biden administration is simply tyrants. I'm sorry, the whole lot of them. As far as I'm concerned, the entire Biden administration should simply be, if we could, I would simply wrap them up and throw the entire thing out of office. The Surgeon General, supposedly our top doctor. I say supposedly because he's not acting like a doctor. He's a propagandist. He is a censor. He was asked by Mika Brzezinski in a segment on MSNBC about comments by Joe Rogan about the doctors, Dr. Malone and Dr. McCullough, and the work they are doing to save people's lives. And you know what his response was? He says, it's such an important question, that we could ask him, because we have the best science available. We have the best public health expertise available. It won't help people if they don't have access to accurate information. Gentlemen, you just denied science because science requires differing points of view. It requires testing and observation. And the testing and observation is remdesivir does not work. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the McCullough protocol does work. But you don't want people to hear that. See, he went on to tell Ms. Brzezinski, when it comes to how we root out the misinformation in society right now and give people access to accurate information, we've got to do several things. Number one, we've got to recognize that our technology platforms, whether particularly social media, these have an important role to play. These are the predominant places where we're seeing misinformation spread. No, Mr. Vivek. You're seeing information spread. Information you don't like, information you want to shut up. You are no different than the doctor that is extorting a patient to get the vaccine because you're denying the American people an alternate point of view and allowing them to look at the data and decide for themselves. You are the worst type of censor because you think you're doing the right thing. But what you are is criminal. You are calling for the censoring of information you don't like. Give it whatever label you want. You say it's misinformation. That's because you're just playing word games. Mr. Vivek, this is an evil position. This stands right up there with the people who denied Newton and other scientists who disagreed with the current understanding. You want to shut up the opposition. It is a constitutional violation. It is an ethical violation to say that vaccines are the solution when vaccines don't work, to say that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin aren't the solution when they've been proven to work, is the worst form of medical malpractice because you're doing it on a national scale. And this infuriates me because Mr. Vivek cannot have his, if his information was correct, if he had, as he said, the best science, then it would prove the opposition wrong. He doesn't. This is how you shut up the opposition when you don't have the right data. If you don't have the data, you use the law. If you don't have the law or the data, you attack your opponent. That's what this is. This is evil. This is disgusting. This is getting Americans killed. And I hope one day he is held accountable for the criminal actions that he is performing. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can listen from any web browser anywhere in the world. Find our apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and now you can hear the podcast on those apps as well. And share them with friends and family to spread the blessings of liberty.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail.